This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of March 29th, 2026. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 441. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker, and on the big deal feature, Canada's sport system is broken, tainted by abuse and corruption. The final report of the Future of Sport in Canada Commission provides the roadmap for repairs. After it was released on March 24th, I talked to Amelia Klein, one of the voices demanding change. Amelia Klein is a former competitive gymnast who suffered abuse but became a lawyer and is spearheading a class action lawsuit against Gymnastics Canada. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. The climax of the two-year Future of Sport in Canada Commission came on March 24th, the day that I'm recording this. The final report, almost 1,000 pages, is called Transforming Sport in Canada, Time for Action. Commissioner Lise Maisonneuve, the former Ontario Chief Justice, called Canada's sport system quote-unquote broken. She said that Canada's sport system is at a pivotal point, struggling with fragmentation, inefficiency, and a lack of safety, transparency, and oversight that has eroded public trust. Participants are calling for a united, accountable system that prioritizes safety, inclusion, accessibility, and strong governance. And joining me to talk about this is from Athletes Empowered, the co-founder and the managing director, Amelia Klein. She is a former gymnast and also is now a lawyer. And Athletes Empowered is calling on federal, provincial, and territorial governments to take immediate coordinated action to implement the recommendations from this final report. Like the final report says, Amelia, you would agree that it's time for action.
Absolutely. We've waited far too long already.
What stood out for you from this report?
A couple of things. One is sort of the validation of what athletes, survivors, advocates have been saying for years, decades, really, that our system is broken, that we have an abuse crisis, and that abuse crisis spans the entire sport system from grassroots right to elite sport. I think that was a powerful statement and a very accurate one. The other piece that stands out is what advocates have been recommending, which is the move to a unified system of safe sport in Canada. So getting away from our very fragmented system that has contributed to the abuse crisis that we see in this country.
The commission under Commissioner Maisonneuve was modeled after the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. It wasn't a full judicial public inquiry with open public hearings like we saw with the Foreign Interference Commission or the Dublin Inquiry back in 1989. That was a pivotal one that led to essentially the formation of the World Anti-Doping Agency after the Seoul 1988 Ben Johnson steroid scandal. Do you think that this commission under Commissioner Maisonneuve, even though it was constructed and handled differently, could its main recommendation help revolutionize Canadian sport for the better? That recommendation is for a centralized entity, a crown corporation, to oversee and overhaul the sport system. It would be the central governing body for all of Canadian sport. It would also be a governing body that would ensure proper funding throughout the sports system and proper accountability for that funding.
Yes, and I think it's important to draw the distinction between how the commission was set up and what advocates and survivors were asking for when before this was announced. And we did ask for a full judicial inquiry under the Inquiries Act, similar to the Dublin Inquiry. We viewed that as a model for, or the strongest model for potential accountability and action after the report was released. So we do continue to have concerns that there may be a drawback that it wasn't done under the Inquiries Act. It provides less mechanism for government to be held accountable in terms of implementing the recommendations. But of course, the hope is that it is going to revolutionize our sports system in Canada. That's the intent. And certainly the government has invested, upwards of $15 million into this commission. So the hope would be that it actually creates meaningful change at the end of the day, and that government is held to account for implementing those recommendations.
They wanted to make it a trauma-informed, but also they were looking at the calendar. They wanted to get it done by the next election. And of course, political forces and consequences took over. The federal election was called earlier than it should have been. There was a change in the Prime Minister's office, of course, going from Trudeau to Carney. There was also the Olympics in the way, and that is a key focus of the Canadian sports system, but that's also an area of the sports system where a lot of the abuse and corruption has happened. Mm-hmm. So you had these political factors weighing in there.
I think from many advocates' perspective, the decision to have this be a commission in the way that it was rather than a complete judicial inquiry was a politically motivated decision. It was it ran contrary to essentially all of the victim survivors who had come forward in the parliamentary hearings studying this issue on abuse. And in terms of the concerns around it being, a trauma-informed process, there was nothing to suggest legally under the legislation that you couldn't implement trauma-informed practices into a judicial inquiry. So that felt like a bit of an excuse. And certainly we were disappointed that it wasn't set up with all of the legislative teeth, if you will, that a full inquiry would have had.
This centralized entity that Commissioner Maisonneuve has recommended, she expanded on it in this final report as something that should become a crown corporation. So that would tie in all the elements of Sport Canada and some other bodies together, and it would be put at arm's length from government as crown corporations are and should be. But she, as part of her recommendation, said it's something that could take 2 to 5 years to set up, or should take 2 to 5 years to set up, instead of, as she says in the title, time for action. Well, setting up this new bureaucracy would take time, maybe too much time. Do you think that this is something that would be beneficial for Canadian sport, that would do everything that the commissioner says it can and should do?
We're certainly hoping so. And that centralized sport entity being created as a crown corporation was actually one of our recommendations that we discussed with the commission when we were participating in the process. It has the potential, I think, to be a very strong entity that's independent from the sports system, which is one of the key factors that we felt needed to be implemented if this was going to work. Really, it's going to live and die by the underlying legislation that implements the entity, and we anticipate doing a lot of work with government to help that process. However, we obviously are concerned about the timeline. We need action now. We need immediate change. We still are being, flooded with news stories of abuse and hazing and racism and horrible things happening within the sports system. So athletes can't wait for meaningful change because there's harm actively happening now. But we're certainly hopeful that the centralized sport entity will be implemented as quickly as possible.
One of the many stakeholders that have reacted is the Canadian Olympic Committee, along with the Canadian Paralympic Committee. They issued a joint statement, and one of the key lines in that statement is that they say that an underfunded system is an unsafe system. Do you agree with that, that that's a central issue, is the funding, not enough funding, or is it a case of not enough proper stewarding of that funding?
I would say it's the latter. I think our system has perhaps been underfunded, but I think there's a broader question of how that funding has been utilized. Historically, we've seen very bloated executive salaries. We've seen very significant administrative budgets. We have not seen the money going to athletes themselves. Many athletes will say that they have to pay out of pocket for their coaching and for their travel, even at the most elite levels of sport in this country. So the people who actually need the funding are historically have not been receiving it. So I think it's a matter of ensuring that the sport system is transparent and accountable about the funding that it does receive. And I think we can't just throw money at a broken system. You have to fix the underlying structural problems before you start investing significant amounts of taxpayer money. Otherwise, you're just going to have the same problems perpetuated.
The report did look at different ways of funding. It did mention sports gambling revenue, for instance. You know, there are already the provincial lottery corporations in Canada, even before they were offering single event wagering after that was legalized by Parliament, they were already granting money to community sports and amateur sports organizations, some on a community level, some on the province-wide level. Now that we do have this explosion in this sports gambling industry, the report did cite other countries, did look at Norway and Japan as examples, even some states down south in the United States, like Colorado and New York. But it did also mention the drawbacks of gambling, the drawbacks including match fixing, which could also involve even further abuse of athletes by gamblers who are trying to fix matches and fix other elements of sporting events. There's also the worry of addiction of gambling, especially younger gamblers who are teenage boys, for instance, very embroiled in sports. Where do you sit there? Do you think that this is something that maybe deserves its own investigation on whether we have too much sports gambling in the country already, or is this another avenue of revenue that should be explored?
I think it's a huge topic that probably deserves its own dedicated study. It's something that seemingly has exploded in the last few years and taken off in a way that's quite alarming. I think there are valid concerns about whether we should be encouraging sports betting, especially when we're using, you know, sort of sports stars to promote sports betting. And what does that mean for, as you say, sort of younger gamblers or just anyone who might get caught up and become addicted to it. There's obviously the concerns about fairness and match fixing as well that are huge. I thought the commission bringing that into the report was an interesting kind of creative solution to some of these concerns around funding. And I think it's worthy of exploration, but I think, as you say, it needs to be balanced with these very valid concerns about the effect of sports betting on the sports system, as well as on the people who are engaging in that that kind of offering.
Do you think that there should be a period of time where Canada actually tries to fix the sports system before taking on other big tasks? And what I mean by big tasks would be bidding for another mega event, whether it's a Winter Olympics or a Summer Olympics. Should Canada kind of push pause on taking on big projects before fixing the sports system, so that if Canada is going to bid on such a mega event, when it invites the world, it can show the world a better sports system than the one that exists today?
Yes, I think government has a responsibility now that we have a very clear report that says our system is broken. I think we have a very clear responsibility to fix that before we start bringing in the world to bigger events, just as we have a responsibility to the grassroots to fix this and the people who are participating at a community level. On the flip side, I think there's also a huge opportunity for Canada to demonstrate on the international stage what a reformed, proper, safe system of sport delivery looks like. So I agree that I think we should probably avoid bidding on some of these bigger events, particularly if we can't guarantee people's safety when they come here, which is essentially what this report is saying, is that people who are engaging with our sports system currently are at risk. So I think we have a profound duty to fix this system at all levels before we start engaging on a higher level as well.
Athletes Empowered, you co-founded and you're managing director. It grew out of Gymnasts for Change, which sprang from the class action lawsuit filed in 2022 against Gymnastics Canada. You're one of the athletes who was a victim of systemic abuse while trying to practice a sport and just do your best. Where does the lawsuit stand today?
Yeah, we actually just had an update sent out to our class members, but we are scheduled for a certification hearing in the fall of 2027 for a month. So things are moving forward. We filed our certification materials just in December of this year. So we're looking forward to having that hearing and having the class certified so that things can move forward.
That's a long time, a long journey to get the accountability and to get the compensation that the athletes are deserved. I mean, this is also Gymnastics Canada, which also released a report that it commissioned through McLaren Global Sports, released that report in January 2023 that did admit that that athletes were wronged, athletes were abused by coaches, and abuse was within the sport. Why is this taking so long?
Yeah, your guess is as good as mine. Of course, our hope always is before the certification hearing, potentially, that parties will come to the table and we might be able to actually negotiate some sort of settlement. That would be, I think, in my view, the appropriate avenue. I think we've spent enough time and money and energy to realize that these things did and are happening. So it would be a tremendous acknowledgement of what we already know for the parties who are involved to actually just come to the table and try to get this resolved for the victims and survivors who have waited a very long time for justice.
As much as going through an actual civil trial might re-traumatize those who were victims, you know, that's one drawback, but at the other end of the scale, getting that accountability and telling the stories in a courtroom and having the attention of the media and getting the guilty parties essentially on the stand and held accountable during examination and cross-examination. I guess there's two schools of thought there, that on one hand, for those who did suffer, they don't want to suffer again. But the other hand, to get that accountability was priceless.
Absolutely. And I think the goal with the lawsuit has always been to help generate systemic change, to make sure that these entities are held accountable for the historical and current abuses that are happening. And of course, to ensure that the class members and the people who have suffered are adequately compensated for that. You know, we're constantly in touch with survivors who say, you know, I'm in chronic pain. I need, you know, weekly therapy. But I can't afford it. So the monetary component of that is critically important, but so is the accountability piece and making sure that this actually results in systemic change.
What else does Athletes Empowered do today, and what are your hopes and dreams with the organization for the future?
Yeah, so we continue to offer individual and group support to victims and survivors of abuse in any sport. So we've grown from, as you say, our Gymnasts for Change days. Very quickly in that process, we realized that abuse was happening in all sports, and we were being approached by survivors from all sorts of different sports across the country. So we offer both support, peer support, to individuals and groups. We also assist in the background on cases that are making their way through. We don't offer legal advice, but we can offer support for people who are navigating the current complaint system and provide some guidance in that regard. We also continue our political advocacy, and that's going to certainly take a bit of a more central role, I think, in the next little while, and with the release of this report, because now it falls to government and leaders to actually implement these changes. And so we're hopeful to be involved in that process to make sure that the policies and legislation that's developed hits the mark.
Athletes in aquatic sports, athletes in gymnastics, hockey, so many other sports across the spectrum, Has that made it easier for you and others who have suffered abuse to tell their stories because now people are listening? And what does this mean for the sport solidarity, athlete solidarity across the spectrum?
I certainly think it has made it easier for people to come forward. It sort of became a snowball effect when, you know, we first came forward as Gymnasts for Change and we released the open letter. We had no idea just the volume of people that we would have coming forward. And that's continued over the last few years where people have continued coming forward to us, continued coming forward publicly. And I think the role of the media has been really significant in that, telling people's stories and doing so in a way that's been sensitive and supportive of their experiences has, I think, demonstrated in a really public way that it's safe in many instances for people to come forward and share. The significance of sort of breaking the silence, I think, has helped in terms of you know, really pushing to hold the sports system accountable. We're not going to be shoved into silence any longer, and people are really going to come forward and start demanding accountability. So I think if there's anything that I take hope from, it's actually that, because the survivors that continue to still come forward and to share their experiences are really the ones who are holding the system to account. They're entirely the reason why this commission report even exists.
And where can people contact Athletes Empowered, especially those who might be looking for help, at least just to share their stories or get some advice on what to do if they have suffered abuse in the sport world?
Please contact us. So our website, athletesempowered.ca, has resources there, and it has our contact, so you can reach out to us anonymously if you wish, and we can offer support that way. We're on all of the social media platforms, so X and Instagram and TikTok. So if anybody wants to find us there, you can certainly reach out. You can also always email me directly, amelia.klein@athletesempowered.ca, and I'm always happy to chat.
Amelia Klein, co-founder, managing director of Athletes Empowered, lawyer now, but a former competitive gymnast and a driving force behind a class action lawsuit against Gymnastics Canada.
Thank you so much for having me.
News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
InFocusTaiwan.tw. Ko faces 2028 presidential race ban after receiving 17-year jail sentence. Ko Wan-je, founder of the opposition Taiwan People's Party, was sentenced for bribery. In the Core Pacific City case, prosecutors accused Ko of receiving almost $500,000 from Xin Cheng Jing, founder and chairman of Core Pacific Group, and an additional $66,000 through Sheen's proxies to secure favorable treatment, including extra floor space area for the project. In ABC News Australia, oil crisis revives talks of levy on plastic packaging to wean Australia off imports. A levy on packaging producers has been revived by global oil shocks, which the industry says has exposed supply chain weaknesses in packaging. The levy and an associated penalty for failing to recycle would be intended to wean Australia off its reliance on imported packaging. In Hong Kong Free Press, coal and gas-reliant HK Electric to dismantle city's sole commercial wind turbine, claiming mission complete. HK Electric said that the turbine saved almost 13 million kilograms of carbon emissions, the equivalent of what 560,000 trees can absorb in a year. But according to Hong Kong Free Press calculations, the $1.9 million windmill project produced around the same amount of electricity as Lama Power Station could produce in 5.19 hours.
That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In Willamette Week, it took more than 5 years to rename Southwest Portland's Custer Park to Ish Chit Way El Nu. Not everyone is happy. The city had spent 5.5 years and nearly $20,000 brainstorming possible new names to replace the one that honored the late General George Armstrong Custer, the military oppressor of indigenous peoples, who died in 1876 at the Battle of the Little Bighorn in present-day Montana. Rob Melton, a former English teacher who lives nearby, said he was speechless. Not only does he fear it will be called Shitty Park, there is an L sound in the second word that is not visible. Quote, "Did nobody even think of that? Did nobody even run that through?" End quote. In Cascadia Daily News, Billingham man who authored children's book charged with possessing child porn. Zachary Robertson, also co-organizer of the Naked Bike Ride, said images were references for his book. Bellingham police arrested a 42-year-old Bellingham man described by his partner as a nudist on suspicion of child pornography possession. In 2020, Robertson authored the kids' book called Norma Normal. And check out thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com for the stories behind these headlines. Disgraced Cesar Chavez was instrumental in NDP MLA Raj Chauhan's career. And Vancouver real estate heavyweights turn out for Carney at Rennie's headquarters. Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com. That's Cascadia calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to
the people at Parkinson Society British Columbia for information, consultation, support services, and education services to help people living with Parkinson's and their families. April, which starts on Wednesday, is Parkinson's Awareness Month in British Columbia.
And you can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar? Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of March 29th, 2026. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 29th of March in 1867, Queen Victoria gave royal assent to the British North America Act, which established Canada on July 1st, 1867? Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca and bobmackin.substack.com. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. Or follow The Breaker News for news as it happens on X, formerly Twitter. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $7 a month. For more information, go to bobmackin.substack.com.
Until next week.